Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Ayin He. Today's daf has been sponsored by Jerry Harari in memory of his brother Yosef Ben Simcha, Sheneftar Bekitzud Yamin Veshanim. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Today's daf is being studied Le'ilun Nishmat Moshe ben Miriam, Mr. Mo Hidari, Alav Shalom, on his yahrzeit, donated by his family, Ruach Hashem, Tanichena, Began Eden. Amen. Today's daf is being studied, Le'adun Ishmat Acham Baruch, Rafael ben Miriam, and Avraham ben Esther, Ruach Hashem, Tanichena, Began Eden. Amen. We are beginning on Ayin Dalid Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom, HaKoreya Almenat Litfor. One of the melachot that we learned in the Mishnah was koreya, tearing with the intent in order to sew. The Gemara says, kiriyah b'mishkan mihava. Where did they tear in the Mishkan? Where did they rip? So the Gemara says, Rabbah v'Rabbi Zerah da'amri tarvayus. Rabbah and Rabbi Zerah both said, sheken yiriyah shenafal ba'darna. If he had one of the curtains that a worm, let's say, fell into the curtain and it bore a hole into the curtain, and it was a round hole. Now, in order to stitch it back, you can't stitch a round hole because it'll cause a crease. So what they do is they lengthen it, they rip it a little to make it straight, and then they're able to sew it across. So that's where they would rip with the intention to sew. So comes the Gemara and says, "Shken yiriyah shenafal ba darnad." And now the worm, korein ba. They would rip it. They would tear it. Vetofrin ota. Then they would re-sew it. Amar Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia. Amar Rav. Hamoteya chut shel tefira b'Shabbat hayav chatat. Statement number one. We're going to have three statements in the name of Rav now. The first statement is, Hamoteya chut shel tefillah. Rashi says, Beged atafur, you have a garment that already was sewn. Ve'omed, it's done already. Ve'niya hachut aruch, ve'nitparidu shte hatichot abeged zumizu. Which means, it seems you had two parts of the garment that were being connected by a chut, by a thread. And it was by a string. And it was coming apart. So what do? He pulls the string to tighten it. So now that causes the clothes to come together. That's moteah, pulling the thread in order to tighten the garments, the cloth to be together. So that she says, in the third line, let's say the two pieces of the garment came apart, and the pieces of thread, let's say, are sticking out, they're long. So he pulls the heads of the thread, he pulls it in order to bring them close. Zui tefirato. That is considered tefirah, and he's going to be hayav. So this is a case where he didn't actually stitch. He actually just pulled, but it did the same effect that it caused the garments to become one with each other. Comes the Gemara and says, second statement, V'halomed davar echad min hamagush hayav mita. If a person learns something from a magush, and as she says, that's a mean, hamamshicho la'avodah zara. That's a guy that has bad ideas. He's an idolater. Afilu devar Torah asulat modem. You can't even learn from him devar Torah because we're concerned that he might draw you in and teach you his philosophy. And therefore, if a guy learns from a magush even devar Torah, hayav mita. Third statement: Bayodeya lehashev tekufot u'mazalot. If a guy has the ability to make calculations with tikufot and mazalot. That's referring to the constellation and the different stars and the solar system, which means he has a fluency in astronomy. And he's able to make the calculations. Ve'eno choshev, but he doesn't make these calculations. Asur lesaper himenu, which means it's forbidden to quote him in Devre Torah, which is if this guy taught you something, you don't quote him. Now we have to see exactly what's the midah, keneged midah, just because he doesn't want to study astronomy, So why do you punish him that you can't quote his teachings? We will see. Gemara analyzes. Magushta. What is a magushta? Which we just learned above that if you learn something from a magush, you hayav mita. So the Gemara is trying to understand what is a magush. So the Gemara says, magushta, Rabu Shmuel. It's actually a machlok and Rabu Shmuel. Hadamar harshe. One says it's a sorcerer, and she says a mikashif. And the one statement is he's a mean Rashi says, which means a heretic. Ha'aduk ba'avodah zarah, that's attached to his idolatry. U'migadif tamid et Hashem. But minnan, he constantly is committing blasphemy against God. U'misit anashim ba'avodah zarah. He's a missionary. He's drawing people to avodah zarah. So we have a mahloket on what the magushta is. Is it either a witch or is it a heretic? So the Gemara says, Tistayim, we can conclude, the Rav de Amar Gidufe. It was Rav that said Gidufe, because we had a mahlok at Rav and Shmuel, what an amgusha is. And we didn't know who said what. We just know one of them said he's a witch, and one of them says he's a heretic. Well, now we can conclude that it's indeed Rav that holds the magushta is the heretic. Why? The Amar of Zutra Bar Tuvia Amar Rav, because we have the other statement that we just learned in the name of Rav that said, Halomed Dabar Ehad Min HaMagush Hayav Mita. If a guy learns something from a magush, he's Hayav Mita. Now why can't that mean if a guy learns from a witch or a sorcerer, it'll be Hayav Mita? Gemara says, can't be Deis Al Kadat Al Kharsheh, because if you're going to tell me it's talking about a sorcerer, HaKetiv Lo Tilmod. I want to read the pasuk correctly. The pasuk actually says "lo tilmad la'asot," which means you're not allowed to learn sorcery in order to practice it. Aval ata lamed lehavin ulhorot. However, but you could learn sorcery to understand it and give rulings on it. For example, if a person's on a beddin, he's a judge. He needs to know all the laws of sorcery and what they do. So if somebody is suspect to sorcery, the judge will know exactly what it is in order to hold them accountable. So you are allowed to learn sorcery. You just can't learn it in order to practice it. So now we go back to Rav's statement. Rav said, anybody that learns something from a magush, hayabita, that can't mean a sorcery. Because Adonai, you're allowed to learn sorcery. So the Gemara says, tistayim. It is a conclusive proof that the magush must mean a heretic, and it was Rav that said it is a heretic. So therefore, anybody who learns a heretic, Chas v'Shalom, would be chayav mita. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapara. Kol ha'yodeya lehashev b'tkufot u'mazalot. Anybody has the ability to study the tikufot, which call them the constellations and the mazalot, the solar system and the different bodies of stars and their orbiting. The Enoch Hoshem, he doesn't contemplate them, he doesn't study it, and he has the ability. Hakatuv, or Alav Hakatuv, on him, the Pasuk says, V'etpoal Hashem lo yabitu. They don't look at the creation of God, the actions of God, and they don't see God's hand, they don't have the ability to see God's handiwork. And they're not interested, and they don't want to analyze, they don't want to see it. Amar Shmuel ban Nachmani Amar Rabbi Yohanan, minayin shemitzvah ala adam nachashev tekufot u'mazalot. How do we know it's a mitzvah for a person to study this type of astronomy, to know exactly what's going on in the solar system? Shne'emak, we have a pasuk, ushmartem ba'asitem, and you have to watch, and you have to fulfill the Torah. Oh, now it says that you have to fulfill something that makes us accepted scholars in the eyes of the Goyim. Now what study that we can have will give us recognition in the eyes of the Goyim that we are indeed Hachamim and Nivonim scholars? So the Gemara says, Ezu Chokhma Ubina Shile'ineha Amim. Now why does that give the Goyim a praise to us when we study the astronomy? So that she says, it seems that that wisdom is evidence that we are Hachamim. We'll be to the eyes of the Goyim. It's evident and clear. Why does the study of astronomy show that? As she says, It's an obvious, evident wisdom. Shemar elaim siman didbarav, which means because you could predict things. For example, you could predict if it's going to be a rainy season, or you could predict if it's going to be a dry season based on the galaxies and the movement over there. So therefore, when a Jew comes along and makes a certain weather forecast based on certain things that he studies in astronomy, and it comes true, so then the Goyim say, look at this, it's just proven fact. Which means they actually... they see it with their own eyes and it came true. And the Torah says, Ushmartem ba'asitem. Study that wisdom and practice it, the wisdom that will make you scholarly in the eyes of the Goyim. She says that, Shomer shanazu geshuma, he'll say it's rainy season, ve'ichen, and it'll happen. Shanazu shechona, it's going to be a dry season, ve'ichen, it happens. Shekol ha'itim, all the times are based, efi malach ha'hama. It's based on the movement of the sun, b'mazaloteha, based on the mazal, u'moladoteha, b'mazal talui hakol lefi ha'sha'ot ha'b'chinot ha'shamesh, b'chinas ha'mal mazal, which means it all depends on the time that the mazal begins, that the constellation starts, which means it's a whole chokhmah, and if you could study and figure it out, you'll know exactly how these things work. The only question is, so a guy that doesn't study the mazalot, so now the hachamim are saying you can't even quote the guy. So I saw an explanation over here that says the following: Yesh mefarshim she'asur lesaper davar halacha mishmo ki en ze kavod haTorah ka'asher lomdeha rechokim mechokhmat chishuv tekufot ashi tefartenu le'ane ha'amim. This is by the Gram Hurwitz, the rabbi's glosses are in the back of the Gemara. He says like this: Adraba, this guy over here that has the ability to study a knowledge that will give Am Yisrael prestige and kavod in the eyes of the Goyim, and he doesn't, so already this guy is involved in a practice that's not kavod haTorah. Which is, he has the ability to elevate Kavod HaTorah, and he doesn't, so we punish the guy. We're not going to quote any of your Devrei Torah. Jeez, when you quote somebody's Devrei Torah, you're giving the guy Kavod. Mm-hmm. You don't give Kavod to the Torah, so therefore, we're not going to give you Kavod by quoting your statements. So he says, Mishum shu eno hafetz le'achshiv chakam v'navon kifi ra'ui lo. Right? He's not going to his full potential to be considered, let's say, a hacham and a navon. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if, fine, you don't want to be considered a hacham? Good, we won't consider you a hacham. We're not going to quote you. Finish. You're not a hacham. Your statements have no meaning to us. So that's why the Gemara says that. Comes the Gemara and continues. Hasad Svi. Right? One of the melachot on Shabbat is somebody that traps a deer. Now the Gemara discusses trapping. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita hatzad chilazon. If somebody on Shabbat traps the chilazon, that is the fish that they got the tchelet. Vaputz'o, that she says, dohako beyadav. They would press it after they would catch it in order that the blood would come out. After all, they need the blood to make the blue dye. So he did two things over here. First he trapped it, and then he pressed it. Eno hayav ela achat. As she says, you only hayav one. Mishum tzeda. The item that they get you on is trapping. Abal apitziah leka hayuv. He says, there is no hayuv on pressing the fish that the blood comes out. Rabbi Yehuda omer hayav shtayim. He says, no, they get you on the pressing as well. Shaya Rabbi Yehuda omer pitziah bichlal disha. He says, yeah, pitzi'ah is a toldah of dash. What is dash? Threshing. What are you doing? You're pressing on the wheat in order to extract the kernel. So here also, you're pressing on the fish in order to extract the item that you need. In this case, it's the blood. So therefore, it's a toldah of dash. Amru lo, so the rabbis come back and say, in pitzi'ah bichlal disha. Say, no, it might be similar, let's say, in action, but it's not dash. So the question is, Amar Rava, my Tamad Rabbanan, what's their logic? I mean, it seems very similar. Kasabri en disha ela legidure karka. They say, no, the rule of dash only applies to things that grow from the ground, like wheat. Dash is only subject to things that grow from the ground. Since the fish is not considered gedule karka, it's not shayach, the tulah of dash. Comes the Gemara and says, v'lehayev name mishum nitilat neshama. Which means, why don't you get the guy also bottom line by taking the fish out of the water? You killed it. So that's killing something on Shabbat. One of the melachot we learned was shechita, which means you're killing something. So nitilat neshama, you took away its soul, so to speak. You took away its life. So therefore, it should be hayav. So the Gemara says that. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rabbi Yohanan, which means actually the Gemara is saying like this: when you're actually pressing it, so you're killing it. Mm-hmm. Which means at the time that you're pressing it and squeezing out all its blood, that in effect you're killing it. Now you'll ask, what do you mean? The fact that you trapped it out of the water, you killed it. So Tosfos says no, because the custom was when they used to catch fish, they used to put them in a bucket, so they used to keep it alive, so it's still swimming. So therefore, the Gemara does bring proofs in other places that the Chelazon did live out of water. For example, the Gemara Megillah says they used to find the Chelazon in the mountains. Now, what is it doing in the mountains? There's no water in the mountains. Unless you see the Chelazon was, amphibious. It also was able to live on the mountains. So therefore, the Gemara is asking, when you press it, you know, the Chelazon can't live without blood. So therefore, you know, it should be Hayav Mishum Tad Neshama. Amar Rabbi Yohanan, which means, add that on to the list. You don't want to say dash. I mean, rabbis don't want to say dash. Right? Fine. But pressing should be hayab mishum nitilat neshama. You should get him on that melacha. So Amar Rabbi Yohanan shepatzom mit. Gemara says, no, we're talking about when you made the pitziah after the fish died. So you just took it out of the water. It was dead. And then you made the pitziah after it. But in a chename, it sounds like that if you made pitziah when the fish was loved, that would cause it to die. He'd be hayav mishum nitilat neshama. Rava amar afilu tema shepitzao chai. He comes on, I tell you, even if you did it when it's alive, mitaseku etzel nitilat neshama. The Gemara says over here, he's a mitasek. So the Mefashim explain, what does this mitasek mean? Meaning the guy doesn't want the fish to die, and therefore we put it in the category of davar she'en mitkaven. He doesn't have kabanan. You know the rule, davar she'en mitkaven, you're not going to be hayav. The only problem is that even though, let's say, you hold that davar she'en mitkaven is not hayav, but if it's what's called a psik resheh, so you are hayav. What is psik resheh? Literally, psik resheh means to chop off the head. Now, that's the way the Gemara uses the terminology to explain something that inevitably is going to happen. They call it psik resheh, the chopping off of the head. The reason why they get that is because it's like a guy that says, you know, he wants to chop off the head of the chicken so his kid can play with it, with the head of the chicken as a doll, but he doesn't have kabana for the chicken to die. So the Gemara would say, psik resheh v'la yimot. But is it possible to chop off the chicken's head without it dying? Which means, I don't give you enough kavana. Which is something inevitably happening is as if you had kavana. That's, you can't say an inevitable thing is called enomit kaven. If it's definitely going to happen, that means that's as if the guy had kavana. So the question is here again. Rava came along and said, nah, he's a mitaseko. Meaning, the guy don't want the fish to die. The guy just wants to get the blood. So in a bit come in, you can't get him. So the Gemara says, Veha Abaye. Let's read Rashi for a second. Mitaseku etzel nitilat neshama. Kilomar legaber nitilat neshama bi mitasek medavar acher velo aviam melechet machshevet. That's the point. She's melechet machshevet. It's not a melacha that has intent. She in a bit come in, she yavut. Clearly, that Jesus says he doesn't have kavanah for it to die. Kavanah says, "What are you talking about?" We know Abaye and Rava both say, Moder Rabbi Shimon, which is Rabbi Shimon, the rabbi that says that Davar She'in Mitkaven is normally Patur, Bifsik Reshah Ve'la Yemot, but he agrees by an inevitable case, like this case over here, where it's inevitable by squeezing the blood out, it's going to die. I don't care if you're not Mitkaven. So Gemara says, Shani Acha, here's different. Dekama De'it Ben Neshamat Fe Nihale. Not only does the guy, it's inevitable that the fish is going to die, this guy doesn't want the fish to die. In this guy, he has a reverse intent. It's not that he's just passive. The guy has a negative intent, so to speak. He doesn't want the fish to die. Why? In order that the dye will be clearer. It seems when they have to get the blood out, so you have to press the fish. But the longer the animal, the fish is alive, the better quality blood is. So therefore, yes, Rabbi Shimon agrees to the concepts of psik nesheh, but that's when what? The guy doesn't care. But over here, Adrabah, the guy has an intent against, which means it's not that he doesn't care if the fish dies or he wants the fish to die, that's certain. Here, it's opposite. The melacha that's happening, first of all, he doesn't have kavana, because he really just wants the blood, mm-hmm. And the melacha that's happening, he's against it, which is he'd rather the fish to stay alive. Let's read Rashi. Why would he rather the fish to stay alive? And the blood that comes from the live fish is better than from the dead fish. He's trying to do everything to extract the blood without killing the fish. That's a very important line in Rashi. When does Rabbi Shimon say Yahayav? Which means, even if the guy doesn't care about the result, if it's inevitable, mm-hmm. Even if the guy says, well, I don't care if it dies or not. She's saying, even though, even if he doesn't care still, if it's inevitable, he's going to be hayav. But he doesn't have a kavanah, like this case over where he wants to, he don't care about anything, not thinking about anything. Here the guy's actually thinking, what? I don't want it to die. Therefore, it would be, again, asur. We all agree it's asur. It's just that you cannot mechayev the guy or korban hatat in such a situation. And the Gemara continues, v'ashohato, one of the melachot that was mentioned in the Mishnah was shohet. Shohet means literally to slaughter. So the Gemara asks, Shohet Mishum Mai Hayav. Where was there Shechita in the Mishkan? Which means, for what purpose did they have to make Shechita? Now we understand that they needed animals, but for what purpose specifically did you have to make Shechita, which is slaughtering by cutting the esophagus and the trachea? You could have just strangled the animal to death if you needed it. So therefore, as she explains the question, Shohet, what was the purpose of Shechita? So the Gemara says, Rav Amar Mishum Tzoveya. So Rav says, really, the Isur of Shechita is because it's dying. Dying meaning D-Y. Ushmuel Amar Mishum Nitilat Neshama. And Shmuel says that the Isur of Shechita is really based on the Tilat Neshama, that you're taking a life. So comes the Gemara and says, Mishum Tzoveya In, Mishum Nitilat Neshama, Lo, are you telling me that you're only Hayab Mishum Tzoveya, but you're not going to be Hayab Mishum Nitilat Neshama, taking a life? Which means it's obvious that they did Shechita in the Mishkan on whatever level, but in order to kill the animal, in order to use its skins. So for sure it had to be Shechita. So the Gemara says, Ema af mishum soveya. So we'll say you're right. Not only Nitilat Neshama, but even soveya, meaning, according to that opinion, if a person makes Shechita and Shabbat according to Rav, Yahayab Mishum, two things. Yahayab Mishum Tzoveya, dying, and Yahayab Mishum Nitilat Neshama. As opposed to the other opinion, you only Hayab Mishum Nitilat Neshama. And the only question is, where is Netzoveya when a person slaughters an animal? So Rav really has to explain that to us, because he's the one that said Tzoveya. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Milta de Amre. That word that I said, that Shehita is Hayav because of Tzoveya, Ema Ba Milta. He says, I'm going to explain the reason to it. Delo litu dare batrae, so the later generations don't come along velechu alai and laugh at me. Which means they might come along and say, what was Rab saying? How is Shechita involved in the dying process in Sivia? So Rab said, I better give an interpretation to it, so the future generation is not going to laugh at me and say, what's the reason why a person is going to, where's their dying? So the Gemara says, Soveya b'mayni'ale. You know, the guy's going to say, Soveya dying, for what purpose was the guy dying when he's slaughtering an animal? So the Gemara says, Niha, he wants it, Dilitvas bet shechita dama, that the place of the slaughtering where the knife slaughters, that means by the neck, they call the neck of the animal, bet shechita, it's good for the guy to have it filled with blood on that spot. So the people will see the redness of the neck of the animal. They'll come and buy meat. Meaning, we're talking about a guy who's a butcher, let's say. So how does he show his customers that the meat was fresh? So he sees, they look at the animal, they see the redness on the neck of it. Geez, the neck of the animal, let's say, normally is white. But now it's all reddened from the blood, so therefore he wants it to be dyed. He wants the skin of the animal to look red, so the customer will see the redness of the animal, and that's an indication that it was freshly slaughtered. Therefore the meat is fresh, therefore he'll come and buy it. So that says, you'll be ayab gamken mishum. So man, and we should point out that Rishonim say, this is only talking about somebody that sells meat. But Rav would agree that if a guy slaughters in his backyard for personal use on Shabbat, he's not interested in Soveya, because he doesn't care that the redness of the flesh of the animal becomes red in order to entice customers. Therefore, it'll only be Hayav Mishum, Netilat, Neshama. Whereas the other rabbis say, you're only Hayav Mishum, Netilat, Neshama. So that's a very important machloket. How many Isurim are involved in Shechita? One shita says only Mishum Nitilat Neshama, where Rav says Mishum Nitilat Neshama, and in certain cases, you could also be Hayab Mishum Tzoveya.
Sure, it's not dying, it's just a result
no,
of
but he wants it. That, no,
but
that's
it's
his
a
intent.
Result of
no, but that's not just have. He wants it. He has Kavanah. That's what Rav was
that's
explaining.
Why
right. That's an indication that the animal is freshly slaughtered. He wants to see blood. He wants the blood to be on the animal's skin, and also people will come and buy the goods.
How do we answer the question?
So after this, how do we answer this question? Which means, according to the Shita that says Nitilat Neshama, that the only Hayav Mishum taking a life, really the Mishnah did not have to say Shechita. The Mishnah could have said Nitilat Neshama. It just chose Shechita because that's the normal way Jews normally kill animals. But you're right, in any fashion, which means if a person would kill an animal or a fly for that matter, like the Gemara says earlier, that if a person kills a lice on Shabbat, it's like he kills a camel, which means it doesn't matter the size of the animal, it doesn't matter how you slaughter either. The Mishnah just chose Shechita as the normal form of the Tilat Neshama. However, according to Rav, it chose Shechita Dafka. Because he's trying to say that when you do Shechita, you can also get the Isur of Tzivya. So therefore, it's a question, is Shechita Dafka or is it Lav Dafka, as we explained. Comes again up further and says, V'amolcho v'amabedo. Now we move on to the tanning process. So the Mishnah listed two different melachot in the tanning process, salting and tanning. So the Gemara asks, "Hainu molayach, the hainu me'abed." The Gemara says it's the same process, the salting and the tanning process. Why should it be listed as two separate melachot? Really, it's one and the same. First they salt it, and then they tan it, but it's all same and the same process. So the Gemara says, "You're right." Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish te'amri tarvayu. Both those rabbis said, "Apik had minayu." Take out one of the two. For example, let's take out molayach. Now you can only end up with 38 melachot. So it says, Ve'ayil sirtut. and throw in the melacha of sirtut. What is sirtut? And the leather, before they cut it, they take a sharp instrument and they make lines in order to define exactly the spot that they're going to cut. That is called sirtut. Or for that matter, like the Rambam writes, on a parchment, they would also make lines in order to make it easier, let's say, to write straight in between the lines. That's called sirtut. Yes, that is a separate melacha. We don't have that. That is a separate melacha that the Gemara is saying, take out, not writing, it's not writing. This is making a line on the parchment. It's making lines on it with a sharp instrument. Writing is making the letters. This is sirtut. So the Gemara is saying like this, you're right. At the end of the day, there's only one melacha called ma'abed, tanning. The Mishnah said molayach and ma'abed. It's the same thing. Take out molayach and put in sirtut, and now you'll have 39.
Same thing.
No, molayach, making a line, got nothing to do with tanning. After the leather is tanned, the next process is they make the lines in it. Now, I want to explain to you. Did Rishonim ask a question on this Gemara? Did Rishonim ask? Above, we had a similar question. We had, Hainu Zoreh, Hainu Borer, Hainu Merakid. We brought three similar melachot, and the Gemara asked, they're all the same. The Gemara answered that whatever was in the Mishkan, and they did it, it's considered a Hashuv Melacha, we count it. Here the Gemara says, Hainu Molayah, Hainu Merabed. And the Gemara comes and says, fine, delete one. What do you mean? Give the same answer. It was in the Mishkan, we count it. So the Shonim answer like this. Earlier, those three melachot, although they were similar, they're all basically selecting, but they happened at different stages, which is they all didn't happen simultaneously as one process. For example, Zoreh, which is winnowing, takes place early in the process, right after they thresh it, they would winnow it with the wind. Later on, they would put it in a sieve, and then they would also be involved with Borer, taking out the impurities from the flour. So you see, when it's a separate melacha done at different intervals, then already the Mishnah says we're going to count it. Here, Molayah Merabed, it's at the exact same time. That is involved in the Arbut or not. You salt it, right after you salt it, you're involved in the tanning it. There, it's not at different stages. That is the process itself. It's just a subdivision of the same process. Therefore the Gemara says, you're right, take out one and put in another. I should point out that comes out over here that if you just read our Mishnah, you will not know the 39 Melachot on Shabbat. Jeez, a person could be a Baki in Mishnayot and not know the 39 Melachot on Shabbat, because our Mishnah does not put in Sirtut. You have to read the Gemara to know exactly that Molayach was deleted and Sirtut was included. Right, that's what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying, according to
Rabbi
Yochanan Mishnah, that's the way they're interpreting our Mishnah. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rabba Baravuna, Hayman de Malach Bisra, Hayav Mishum Me'abed. You have a fellow that salts meat on Shabbat, he is going to be Hayav Mishum Me'abed. Now of course it is not tanning leather over here, but what does tanning leather do? It makes the leather hard. So too when you salt meat, it makes the meat hard, because the juice goes out of it. Therefore they're saying it's a toldah of Me'abed. According to this opinion, it's Isur Deoraita. It's a toldah of Ma'abed. Rava Amar in Ibud Be'ochlin. Rava comes and says, no, there's no such thing. Ibud only applies to leather. It's not applicable to food. Amar Ravashe, Vafilu Rabba Baravuna. Even Rabba Baravuna that said there is Ibud by meat. Lo Amar Ela de Kaba'ele Le'orha. It's only talking about where you're salting the meat to preserve it for the road. When your guy's traveling, so he needs to preserve the meat. How did they preserve it in the olden days? They would salt it. And therefore the meat would become hard. However, but if the guy's regularly salting his meat in his house, a guy's not going to make his food hard like a tree, like a piece of wood, which means regular salting in the house is not going to be hayab mishum ibud. What type of salting is going to be hayab? Only salting that's done for the road, which is ample salting, which causes the meat to become hard. Now I should point out in the Taptos thought, he explains the opinion of Rava that said en ibud beochlim. Tosfot just says en laatir mikan melihat ochlim de asur midrabanan meliha, which is even though it's not asur min haTorah, Rava does concede there's going to be an isur midrabanan. So the machloket is it isur deoraita or is it isur the rabbanan? Comes the Gemara and discusses the next two melakot, the hamme mahako, the hamme hatecho. The mahak we said is smoothening out. The mechatecho is cutting. Amar Rabbi Acha Bar Hanina, Hashaf ben Amudim b'Shabbat Hayav Mishum Memachek. What is Shaf ben Amudim? Here we have another machlok between Rashi and Tosafot. Rashi understands that you had, let's say, a courtyard, and in the courtyard you had beams, let's say poles that were in the courtyard that were spaced in between each other, and the ground by those beams, let's say, would be uneven. So you'd come and smoothen it out. You'd make the ground level to smoothen it out. So he says, Yahayab Mishum Mimahek. Comes to Tosafot and says, what are you talking about? We just learned on a previous daf that if somebody smoothens out holes in his house on the ground, he's Hayab Mishum Boneh. That's not Mimahek. So therefore Tosfot learns that Shaf bin Aramudim means these poles or these beams had leather trappings around them. Wow. And therefore if a person goes on Shabbat and smoothens out the leather around the beam, that is Mimahaik. And that makes sense because Mimahaik was said by the leather. So it was look at the Shiva Tosfot, exactly where the Shaf was bin Aramudim. Amar b'chaya bar Abba. Gimel Devarim Sahli Rav Ashi. He says three things were told to me by Rav Ashi. Meshemed Rabbi Yoshua Menevi, in the name of Rabbi Yoshua Menevi. Hamegared Rashi Klusnot B'Shabbat Hayav Mishum Mehatech. Number one, a person who sharpens the head of Klusnot. Klusnot would be, let's say, beams on Shabbat, or planks on Shabbat, poles, he's going to be Hayab Mishum Mechatech. What is he actually doing? He wants to make the top of the pole sharp. So what does he do? He chips them, he chisels them. So therefore, you're cutting wood. So that would be Hayab Mishum Mechatech. HaMemareyach Retiyah B'Shabbat Hayum Mishum Memachek. Someone that puts an ointment on a wound on Shabbat, for example, he takes a tachmoshet, as she says, which would be like a bandage, and the bandage it has, let's say, ointment, cream, let's say, which is medicinal. He puts it on his wound on Shabbat. What happens to the cream?
It spreads.
It smoothens out. So yahayav mishum memachek. V'amisatet et ha'evin b'Shabbat, hayav mishum makeh b'patish. And somebody that's misatet even, that she learns that after they take it out of the quarry or the mountain, they smoothen the rock, you know, to make it even. So that would be makeh b'patish, adding the final touches to the rock. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Kisma, and some have the Girsa, the Bachas Bisna. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Hatzar Sura Bichli. If a person, let's say, after he finishes making a vessel, he draws a picture on the vessel, v'menapeyach b'chli zechuchit, or he blows a glass vessel, which means they used to make glass vessels by blowing them, hayav mishum makeh b'patish. Both these things are considered adding the final touches. After you made the vessel, now you just put a design on it. That design is considered adding final touches. And for that matter, blowing the glass is also considered makeh b'patish. Tosfot had a problem with that on the early adopt, because he said making the keli is considered boreh. So therefore he leaves it in the Sarich Ayun. Why would this really be makeh b'patish? Blowing the vessel makes it a vessel. Whereas Rashi that learned en binyan bekelim. So therefore Rashi has no problem. He could say that this is really makeh b'patish. Amar Yehuda, Hayman deshakil akufe megilime, hayab mishum makeh b'patish. Gemara says, if a person takes the akufeh from his gilimeh, let's say from his robe, what is akufeh? So that she explains one of two options. Either, let's say, you have some threads that are out of place, and he pulls these threads out because it's making the garment not nice. So he pulls off these, you know, extra threads at the end of the garment. Or, let's say, in the garment itself, in the weave, there's some pieces of wood, somehow little pieces of splinter or wood gotten caught in the garment, so he's plucking out these pieces of wood. So the Gemara says that's the finishing touches to make the garment. No, that's makeh b'patish. That's making the garment now wearable. Which means you can't wear the garment until you finish it off. How do you finish it off? You take these little these little things that you're not interested to have them on there. So the Gemara says, "V'ani mili dekapid alayu." but it's only talking where it bothers you. Which means, if a guy would wear the garment anyway, so it's not Makir Patish, technically in his mind, the garment is finished without it. But if he's Makpid, not to wear it like that, so he pulls these things out. So now you're making the garment viable, so that would be Makir Patish. If a person writes two letters on Shabbat, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Braita, Katav Ot Ahad Gedola. Let's say a person wrote one letter, but one big letter. In the space where you could have written two letters, two smaller letters, patur. Which means that we don't judge the size of the letter, we judge the amount of letters. So one big letter is not equivalent to two small letters. Hence he's patur. Mahak ot gedola. However, if you erased one big letter, the yesh b'mkomah lichtov shtayim hayav, and it has in its place space where you're able to write two letters, that's considered a substantial erasure to be considered hayav, which means mehika has a stringency over ketiba, whereas ketiba you actually have to write the two letters. For mehika, for erasing, so long as you erase a letter that now gives you the space that's available to write two letters, you're going to be hayav. Amar Rabbi Menachem b'Rabbi Yosef, v'zeh chomer b'mohek b'bekotev. Rabbi Menachem b'Rabbi Yosef says this is a stringency that erasing has over writing. That she comes along and says, what is Rabbi Menachem b'Rabbi Yosef come to teach me? It's obvious. Obviously we see a stringency of mehika over ketiba. So that she comes along and says, the Gemara is just telling us he was the author of the statement. That braita that said, katav ot arad gedola, etc. Who's the author of that anonymous braita? It's actually Rabbi Menachem b'Rabbi Yosef. Habone v'asotet, hamchabe v'hammavir v'hammakeh b'patish. If a person does the following melachot, boneh, that's building, soter is demolishing, mechabeh would be extinguishing, mavir would be igniting, and makir patish would be adding final touches. Rabbah v'Rabbi Zerah d'Amri Tarvayu, both rabbis said, kol midi de'it be'gmar melacha, anything that is the finishing of the melacha, chayav mishum makeh bepatish, which means anything that you finish the melacha, but now you added final touch, so you finish the melacha, then they get you on makeh bepatish. I want to say over one chidush that we said over on this Mishnah before we continue. If you look at the way the Mishnah listed the lamed tet melachot, we see that it put a letter he in front of each one of the melachot, which means it said ha horesh, ha kotzer, ha lash, ha ofer, which means the fellow that plows, the fellow that sows, the fellow that reaps. Whereas Harambam, when he lists the lamed tet melachot, he just lists the melachot horesh, zoreya, kotzer, me'amer. So one may ask, why did the Rambam change from the style of the Mishnah that put the melacha on the one that's performing the melacha, as the Rambam just put it, the melacha on its own? So we might explain as follows. We know there's a great machloket between the Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbi Yehuda, and the machloket of melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa, where Rabbi Yehuda says Yehayav and Rabbi Shimon says Patur. What is the melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa? So we explained several times that any melacha that you don't need the result of the melacha, so that would be ena tzidicha legufa. For example, we explained one case would be the case of the digging. That's the case that happens to be everybody agrees, where a person is digging a hole that you don't want the hole, you want the dirt. So therefore you don't want the melacha of digging per se, you just did it for the dirt. And anyway, we have a great machloket between the Bi'uda, he's Mahmid. He says, even if you don't want the result, Yehayah, by when you did the melacha. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, no, you need to have the result. For example, Rabbi Shimon would say, when you extinguish a fire, in most cases you're not going to be hayah, because you don't care for the extinguishing. You just want to put out the fire, but you don't need the thing that you extinguished. When are you hayav according to the Mishmon for Mechaber? Only because you needed to make a coal in order to make it easier to relight. So therefore that's the case what? Where Mechaber is going to be hayav. Incidentally, that's maybe why our Mishnah, when it listed 39 Melachot, it put Mechaber before Mavir. Because if you're going like Rabbi Shimon, the only type of kibui that you're going to be chayav on is one that leads to mavir. In any event, we can answer that question now as well that we asked. Meaning, according to our Mishnah is going according to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that says the melacha shenatzilik aligufa is patur. Therefore, a melacha is done, it's going to be dependent on the kavanah of the one that's doing the melacha. So therefore the Mishnah attributes the melachot to the one that's doing it. Ha-choresh, ha-kotzer, ha-zoreya. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbam was posek like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbam holds that a melacha shena sedekah legufa is hayav. Therefore, we don't care about the intention of the one that's doing it. Therefore, exactly. The act is the act, exactly. Therefore, when he lists the melachot, he just says, it doesn't matter what the intention of that. So therefore, Rambam was actually precise, the shitato, according to his opinion. Comes the Gemara and continues and says, Elu avot melachot. Towards the end of the Mishnah, the end of our Mishnah said, these are the avot melachot. So the Gemara asks, the Gemara says, Elu, what do you have to tell me these are avot melachot? We know that, the Mishnah listed them. So Gemara says, La'apukem ed Rabbi Eliezer. It's coming to exclude the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, the mechayev al tolda bimkom av. Rabbi Eliezer holds that not only are you hayav for 39 avot, but you also hayav, if you do an av and it's tolada, you're also going to be hayav too. Whereas our Mishnah is coming to say, no, Elu Avot Melachot, you're only Hayav on the Av, you're not going to be Hayav on the Tolada. So therefore, you needed the end of the Mishnah to tell us that by Dush. Comes to Tosafot and says, don't I know that from the beginning of the Mishnah? The beginning of the Mishnah said, Avot Melachot Arbaim Chaser Echad. And we learned from that, and each melacha is considered separate, that if you do all of them, you're going to be hayab 39. So what could you learn from this? So Tosfot answers that I could argue and say that no, the Mishnah is just telling you these are the 39 major melachot. However, there's, let's say, others that also you could be hayab. However, the Gemara is coming from the fact that the end of the Mishnah said Avot Melachot is coming to tell that you only Hayab Mishum Avot, and you're not going to be Hayab Mishum Toladot. Is there opinion that says that you Hayab Mishum Toladot? Yes, the Bini Aizer. So it's coming up okay that. Comes the Gemara and says Haser Ahat. The last part of the Mishnah said Elu Avot Melachot Arbaim Haser Ahat. 40 minus 1. So what does the Mishnah have to repeat to us? The number of melachot. You already told us that. So Gemara says that pokem the Rabbi Yehuda. It's coming to exclude Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Gemara says detanya. Gemara says detanya. Rabbi Yehuda mosif et hashobet v'hamedakdek. Rabbi Yehuda added two more melachot to the melachot of Shabbat. Shovet would mean one takes a type of utensil that's called a charkar. It's like a pointy object, and sometimes when the threads of the warp, when a person's making the ariga, when he's weaving, sometimes the threads get bunched up. So he needs to separate them. So he takes this charkar and he separates the threads. That's called shovet. Midakdek is he takes another type of vessel and the threads of the weft that are, you know, strung across, sometimes they're stretched out too long and they don't sit nicely. So he bangs on it in different spots in order that it'll settle nicely. So he actually held the biudat at this 41 milachot. There's the 39 of our Mishnah plus shovet and midakdek. So therefore the Mishnah comes along and says, there's only 39, which means we don't go like Rabbi Yehuda. Amru lo, so the rabbis told Rabbi Yehuda, Shovet, Hareu Bechlal Mesech. Shovet is a tolda of Mesech, or it's part of the Av. Meaning, what is Mesech? Remember we learned dressing the beam of the weft, of the warp. The warp beam used to dress it with threads before they would start the weaving process. So this is similar, which means you're putting the threads in order that they're not bunched together. So that's part of Mesech. Medakdek, which means banging the weft part of the weaving process in order that it sits nicely, Harel Bechlal Oreg. That's part of the melacha of Oreg. So therefore they agree that these things are hayab, but they're already included in the 39. Even though the technically they're being separate, but it's all part of Ariga or it's part of Mesech. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, these are considered separate melachot. Comes the Gemara and says, comes the Gemara Mishnah. Actually, before we start the Mishnah, I'll just tell you one hidush that I saw from the Sefarim. Now that we did the 39 melachot, if we want to put the melachot, let's say, in groups, we might say that in the 39 melachot, you have the first 11 melachot, which the Gemara taught us are Sidura Depat. Those are all the melachot that discuss making bread, starting from plowing all the way to baking. And then the next 13 melachot discussed the all the different melachot involved in making garments, which means starting from the gozes, you know, the shearing it, etc., all the way down to finishing the garment. And then you have 11 melachot. Sorry, you have 7 melachot that talk about the making of leather, starting from the tanning process, etc., cutting it and finishing it off, etc. Then you have 8 that are miscellaneous. You know, you just have different melachot that are hayav on Shabbat. So these numbers, 7, 8, 11, and 13 are very significant, because those are the exact wrappings of knots that we place on our sisiyot, according to the custom of the Ari. So where did they get 7, 11, 8, and 13? Because they wanted us to remember the different groupings of the melachot of Shabbat. Why? Because the Gemara says there are two mitzvot that are shekula keneged kol haTorah kula. There are two mitzvot that are tantamount to the entire Torah. What are they? Shabbat and the mitzvah of sisit. So in sisit, they wanted to give you a remez to Shabbat. So therefore, they gave you the 7, 8, 11, 13, so you remember the groupings of the melachot. Comes the Mishnah and goes further. I just have to go back because I did say something that was inaccurate. I will go back and explain one word of the Tosafot. I confused the two Tosafotim, so I would like to repeat it just for clarity. The Gemara said that the reason why it said Av, these are the Avs, succumbing to La'apukeh, the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. Because Rabbi Eliezer says what? Yahayav in an Av and it's Tolada. So the Mishnah came along and said, no, only on the Avot. So we asked from the Tosafot, wouldn't we have known that from the beginning statement of our Mishnah that said these are the 39 melachot? So let's read the Tosafot together inside. V'im tomar, meresha shamainan. Now the resha was actually not the resha of our Mishnah. The resha is actually from the first Mishnah in the Perek that said, ha'osem melachot tarbe me'en melacha achat, eno chayav ela achat. Which is the first Mishnah that we learned in the beginning of the seventh Perek said, if a guy does many melachot, from the same melacha, you only hayav one. So from there it's explicitly Lekaura telling us, you don't go like Rabbi Eliezer. Because you only hayav one if you do different melachot that are similar. So therefore, we should have learned it from there instead of from a diyuk from the word avot. It's really written explicitly. So Tosfot answers, v'yesh mefarshim da'avamina me'en melaka achat haynu shte toladot me'av echad. I would explain that first Mishnah means, let's say you did two toldot from the same av, then I'll say you hayav one. But maybe if you did an av and its tolda, you'll be hayav two. That's why our Mishnah comes along and says, these are the avot, meaning the only hayav on the av, you're not chayav on an av and tolda, meaning you wouldn't be able to deduce the Bili Ha'ezer from the first Mishnah. Because I could argue when it says, when you do things that are similar, it could mean not an av and a tolda. It meant two toldot from the same av. Hence, we needed a clearer proof for the Bili Ha'ezer from the Duke of Al Mishnah Avot. Comes the new Mishnah and says,
You
would have said in that case, that's what the Mishnah said above, you're going to be Hayav 1. But maybe if you do an Avot Tolda, you'll be Hayav 2. Comes Al Mishnah and says, no, Avot, you're only Hayav on the Avot. If you did the Avot Tolda, You only chayav one. Who is it coming to exclude? Rabbi Eliezer. Next Mishnah. Ve'od klal acher amru. If you remember right when we learned the beginning of the seventh perek, we were told that the reason why it's said in the first, exactly, why it said in the first Mishnah, klal gadol, because there was another klal coming up that wasn't so intricate. So there was, this is it. Ve'od klal acher amru. There was another klal that was the rabbis taught us. Kol hakasher latzniyah umatzni'in kamohu. Ve'otzio b'shabbat hayav hatat alav. The first din of the Mishnah is like this. Cowering, which is one of the 39 melachot, there's a certain shi'ud, a certain measure of how much you're going to be hayab if you carry, which means it's not just anything. It has to have a certain shi'ud to it. And secondly, besides it having to have a certain measure of each item, what's considered significant, it has to be an item, the Mishnah is telling us, that is normally stored by people. It has to be something that people hold significant. What's the indication that it's significant? People would save the item. People would store the item. And then, not only do they store it, but they hold it in a certain esteem if it's a certain shi'ur. But less than that shi'ur, let's say, they don't treat it in esteem, then already it's not going to be subject to the laws of carrying on Shabbat. So the Mishnah says, Ve'od klal acher amru. We read the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Kol hakasher latzniyah. First of all, anything that's fit to be stored, which means people store the item. Umatzni'im kamohu, and the majority of people do store the item. Votzi'o b'shabbat. And anybody carries that item on Shabbat in the proper measure, hayav hatat alav. Which the Mishnah is telling us, Hiddush, even if you yourself don't store the item. Let's say you're a rich guy, this item to you has no value, and you don't store it, you're not concerned about it. But since the majority of people hold this item as value, majority, and they place it away, let's say, in a certain measure, if you would carry that measure that most people hold important, and you would carry that on Shabbat, even though to you it's not important, and you wouldn't even save the item, you're going to be hayab. That's the first din in the Mishnah. And any item that's not, let's say, befitting that people would store, and most people do not store it, and then a guy went out on Shabbat and carried it, the only guy that's going to be hayab is the guy that actually stored it. Which means, on things that the majority of people don't store, but you have one guy that happens to store that item. He will be chayav if he carries that item. But his, you know, he's the exception. He's not going to ruin it for everybody else. That's the two dinim in the Mishnah. So the Gemara asks, Kol hakasher latzniyah. Oh, you're telling me the first din. Anything that's befitting to store away, that has significance for everybody in the laws of carrying. Lapukeh mai. What are you coming to exclude? It's coming to exclude damnida, which means a guy is not going to save damnida. Now we're not talking about a person that wants to save damnida because he wants to show it to the rabbi to get a ruling. In that case, maybe that type of damnida has a hashimut. But in generally speaking, nobody saves damnida. So therefore, if some guy would go out on Shabbat carrying damnida, you're not going to be hayav hatat. Why? Because it's not an item that people would store. Morogba amar lapuke atzei asherah. He comes up with a different example. He says, it's coming to exclude the wood of an asherah. Asherah is a tree that the people worship for avodah zarah. Nobody saves it because you have to destroy it. So the Gemara says, man damar damnida, the opinion that says you don't store damnida, kol sheken atzei asherah. Because damnida is not forbidden to store. But atzei asherah, it's forbidden. You have to actually burn it. So if you say damnida, you don't store. So kol sheken, atzei asherah. Man damar atzei asherah, aval damnida matznah le lishumrah. He says, yeah, asherah stuff, you're not going to store. But you'll store the blood of nida. For what? Gemara says, to give to the cats.
Yeah.
To eat. So the Gemara says, what's the other opinion say? V'idach kevan dechalsha, since the person is going to become weak because of this, lo matzna'le. What does that mean? The Gemara says that if a person feeds human blood to an animal, he gets weakened. Yeah. And therefore, a guy's not going to give the blood of the cat to a cat. because he doesn't want to become weakened. So therefore, he's not going to store it. The Ramban, in his commentary on the Torah, explains that dam nida is poisonous. And one of his proofs is if you feed it to an animal, the animal will die. So therefore, based on that Ramban, we can explain what the Gemara means over here. Kevan dehalsha, it's not going on the guy. It's going on the animals. And since you killed a cat, so therefore you're not going to feed it. So then we have a machloket in the Gemara over here. Which means they all agree in the principle. The principle is what? If it's kasher, that's niyah. What is it coming to exclude? So one rabbi says it's coming to exclude dam nida and kol shekin atzei asherah. The rabbi says, no, it's coming to exclude atzei asherah, but dam nida, no, because she'll give it to the cat. And the rabbi says, no, you're not going to give it to the cat, either because it's going to weaken you, like Rashi says, or like the Ramban, we explained, they'll kill the cat. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rabbi Yosef, the Rabbi Hanina. Bar Hanina. Hai delo k'Rabbi Shimon. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Shimon. De'i k'Rabbi Shimon, ha'amar lo amru kol ha'shi'orim alalu, ela le'matzni'ehen. Which means, later on, we're going to learn the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon holds that if Rov b'nei Adam or matzni'ah something, store something, that is going to have no bearings on a rich guy. Which means the rich guy that doesn't store this item is not going to be affected by Rov b'nei Adam. Which means Rov b'nei Adam will affect people like them that normally would store such a thing, even though if they didn't ever store such a thing. But a rich guy who never stores such a thing, so to speak, in a different class, he's not affected by Rov b'nei Adam. So the Bishamon holds like this. Rov b'nei Adam that stores something, they'll affect regular b'nei Adam. But their actions are not going to make the Ashir who carries such an item out Hayav. That's against our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah clearly said if it's Kasher Latzniyah and people are Matzniyah, everybody is held responsible. So therefore it's Lapukeh that Shita. We conclude V'chol She'enu Kasher Latzniyah, that's the second part of our Mishnah. Anything that people do not store and it's not important to them, only the storer himself will be Hayav if he carries it on Shabbat.
That's
different. Which means that the first deen is Rov b'nei Adam stored in everybody's Hayav. This is not where Rov b'nei Adam do not store it. It's just one guy happens to store this item, so only he is Hayav, but he's not going to affect Rov b'nei Adam. It's the converse.
What would Rabbi Shimon agree with that?
No, Gemara says in the contrary, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Hadelok Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. This is also not like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Why? What did he say? Gemara says, now what? The Tanya, Klal Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Kol She'eno Kasher Latznia, Ve'en Matzni'in Kamohu, V'hukshar Lezeh. But this one guy holds that this item is befitting, V'tzni'o, and therefore he stored it away, Uba'aher V'hotzi'o, and then another guy took out a similar item like that, Nithayav Zeh B'machshava Shel Zeh. He holds that the one guy ruins it for everybody else. Which is once already one guy shows that this item is hashuv, with this guy's machshava, so to speak, he makes it now culpable if somebody else is going to carry the similar item out. So it comes out, we have varying views over here. We have the view of our Mishnah that spoke out very clearly, it goes with the Rov. The Rov affects everybody, and if you're in the minority, it only affects yourself. We have the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, the second view, that says the majority can affect regular people, but it's not going to affect the Ashir. The Ashir is not going to go after the regular, because it is, but he never would do such a thing, which means Rov b'nei Adam will affect regular people that might not store this specific item, but they would store it, therefore you hayav. But a rich guy who would never store it, not going to get him. The third opinion is the most mahmid opinion. The third opinion is Rabbi Shimon al-Hazar. He says that all you need is one guy to be matzniya an item that nobody else is matzniya, and now already if somebody else goes out on Shabbat carrying that item for this guy's machshava of making it important, the other guy is going to be Hayav. Now, obviously, so it seems what the Mishnah Rabbah was saying, that specific item that was being matzniyad by that fellow, which means he made this item important. Now, if he takes that item and goes out, the machshavah shel zeh, the tchayev zeh. Baruch Adonai Le'olam. Amen.